Nice of you to make
Did you steal my gavel, Neil? I found it. Oop, I lost. Oh, there it goes.
You'll never be a judge. You'll never make a judge.
I already hit the head off the gavel. Did I get your attention?
Door prize.
Okay. We're going to begin with a couple door prizes, and then I do have something a little more serious I want to do. So, Denise, why don't you go ahead with those?
Okay. Our first door prize is going to be some cash, $20 to be exact. Plus an audio book.
Thank you.
It's by Danielle Steele. I don't think you'll like it. And then also an answering machine.
Oh, he
so
won't like
I'm
that.
Going to draw a name out of here.
They still
and,
make those?
It goes to Charles Stolzenbach.
Yeah, vendor.
He should be here. Stolzenbach.
Charles.
Vendor.
Busted.
Do it again.
Okay.
Charlie.
All righty.
Then we do have a lot of vendors here. We could pick a different one.
Pam Gilmore.
Oh, I heard Pam. Pam is here. Let's do another one, please.
Okay. Now, we have cookies from Debbie Stein. And
thank you.
We have another audiobook. I'm not sure who that's by, but we will draw another name.
Betty Odom Davis.
And that is Deborah Birmingham.
I'll bet she's here. Her husband's right here. Are you here, Deborah?
She's here.
Her husband's right up here. Is she here?
Yeah, she's here.
Okay, we got her. Now, okay. Denise, do one more.
All right.
One more. No, that was not $1,000. You wish.
What?
Yeah. That's
yep.
For me later.
One more is a, it's like a three-piece,
suit.
A three-piece red, luggage, soft luggage, basically, is what it is. And that is going to go to
John Gordon.
Patrick Olson.
Patrick Olson, are you down here? I don't think he's down here.
Okay.
Do it again.
All right. Let's see. Robert Dickman.
I bet he's here. It would be Roberta Dickman.
I'm sorry, Roberta.
Roberta, are you
I'm
here?
I'm sorry. I can't read my Braille right. Forgive me. It is
well,
Roberta.
We've got John Gorman and Robert Dickman so far. So. I think we found Roberta. Did we get the Prodigy voice meter given out yet?
No.
Okay. Attention diabetics. If you win a door prize, you may exchange any door prize for the Prodigy voice. Want to make sure it goes to a diabetic.
Good deal.
Okay. I'm going to change gears for a minute. I do need your attention. Definitely going to change gears for a second. As most of you know, Kelly Doty's wake was last night. They passed out a poem last night at her wake on a postcard. And I'm going to ask Julia to describe this and then read the poem for us.
Okay. At the top, we have a picture of Kelly. And then below that, it says, "In loving memory of Kelly A. Doty, March 22nd, 1958 to October 1st, 2012, mass of Christian burial, St. Mary Catholic Church, Huntley, Illinois, Saturday, October 6, 2012. Interment, St. Mary Cemetery. The poem is titled, "I'm Free." Don't grieve for me, for now I'm free. I'm following the path God laid for me. I took his hand when I heard him call. I turned my back and left it all. I could not stay another day to laugh, to love, to work or play. Task left undone must stay that way. I found that peace at close of day. If my parting has left a void, then fill it with remembered joy. A friendship shared, a laugh, a kiss. Ah, yes, these things I too shall miss. Be not burdened with times of sorrow. I wish you the sunshine of tomorrow. My life's been full, I've savored much. Good friends, good times, a loved one's touch. Perhaps my time seemed all too brief. Don't lengthen it now with undue grief. Lift up your hearts and share with me. God wanted me now, he set me free.
Thank you, Julia.
Okay, there once was a man from Nantucket.
Okay. Hard to do that and then shift gears again. Many of us will miss her greatly, but I thought we'd want to share that. Now, I don't know, almost a year ago now, I got a call from Kevin Worley, who is active in our merchants division on the national level. And he said to me something like, Illinois vendors have decided to leave RSVA.
Yeah.
Which I thought was an okay thing. Yeah. And I said yes, because I know Kevin, and I said yes, and he said, and we need to see if we can bring them into the NFB fold. So we've been working on that since then. And this is the first convention at which we've had a major contingent of vendors. Let's hear it from the vendors in the room. I asked these gentlemen to come and talk in general about vending and the vending stance that they have, but in more specifically also about the BEP program. So you're going to hear from five speakers, and I guess I'll take them in the order we put them on the agenda, probably because that's what they'll expect. No, you don't want to do that? Oh, Nikki wants to go last.
Confuse them.
I can go first.
All right. Raven, I assume?
Yes.
Was that Raven?
Yes, it is.
Oh, all right. We will put Raven Pulliam is the head of the Business Enterprise Program. He's been with us before at convention. In fact, when he first got his job, within a very short time, I had occasion to meet with him. The gentleman impressed me from the beginning, in part because it wasn't hard to get that meeting with him. So he's been a friend since he started in terms of at least access and so on. Now, I'm going to have a question for you when you're done, Raven, but tell me what you're doing right now. Okay. Go ahead. Now, you want the podium here?
Oh,
okay.
I'll.
Any way you want to do it.
Hello, everyone.
Oh, morning.
So who in here has no clue about the Randolph Shepherd program?
Yeah.
I am sighted, so put your hand up high.
What's AI?
Okay, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
I got my hand up.
Eight individuals.
And
the good thing is,
we know nothing.
We need help over here.
All right. The good thing is, the majority of them were under 20. So we do have room for you guys. Our program was started a long time ago, back in the 1930s. And it has grown from just having cigarette, cigar, candy stands to major restaurants, troop dining facilities at major military locations, to large vending operations. A manager can make a little bit of money, or they can make millions. For a lot of young people, that really perks your eye, doesn't it? Millions. Can everybody say millions? All right. So out of this program, some individuals become millionaires. And I know Nikki knows several, John knows some, and I'm aware of a few. Too bad they're not good friends of mine.
Raven's one of them.
If I was a millionaire, I'd be scamming, and I don't do that. I live off a meager state employees' income, I'm sorry. But the program has afforded a lot of different people an opportunity. I look up here and I see people that really didn't have much of a vocation, like John Gordon before he was blind. He didn't have much of a vocational opportunity, did you, John?
Well, no, not at 18. That's
for exactly, sure. Exactly. And then I see Ed Birmingham. He was in the medical field. What were you at, EMT?
Paramedic.
Paramedic. And then we have Jess Rogers up here. What did you do before you were a vendor?
Well, actually, I had panic attacks for 25 years and couldn't do much. Couldn't leave home.
So he didn't do much. So what this program does is it gives normal, everyday people with reasonable intelligence, in some respects high intelligence, to operate businesses. And the businesses that we operate are cafeterias, gift shop, and vending locations, in some instances, convenience stores. And we're always open for new opportunities to operate businesses. So if there is a business opportunity that fits our model and we can fund it, we're willing to do it. So just keep us in mind, you young people, when you think about what am I planning on doing for the rest of my life? It's nothing wrong with going to school. Matter of fact, if you're a college graduate, we want you even more. Because the more opportunities that you can dream of, we want to hear them so we can bring them to fruition. So that is my beginning. And did you have a question for me, Patty?
Yeah, I do. I know you've been working. I guess I should get in the mic since we're streaming. I know you've been working on adding stands at the prisons. I want to know what the next step is going to be after those are done. How are we expanding the program? How are we going to get bigger opportunities and give some of these young folks an opportunity?
She is right. The next, the phase that we're on now is, it is getting all of our state locations in line. There was an act that's called 2421, Public Law 2421. It enabled us to have all rights to vending on state property. And that means every state property, with the exception of universities, community colleges, things like that. But the state prisons are what we're focusing on now. So far we've got, I believe, 6 or 7 of them open now, but we've still got probably 20 left. And then we've got adult transitional centers, that's another branch of corrections. We've got parole offices, that's another branch of corrections. And we've got all those different opportunities
juvenile
for the vendors
justice.
That, yeah, juvenile justice facilities, that's for the individuals that are youth that have committed crimes and then they have to get locked up till they become 18, I believe. I think some of them are in there till they're like 21, but those
yes.
are, extra cases. But what they have is a little section that's like a break room. And there's vending machines in there. And when their loved ones come to visit them, they have an opportunity to purchase things out of the vending machine. And a lot of times this is the only opportunity that they can get some junk food or, in some respects, in the correctional facilities, the good stuff, meaning like some pizzas, some fried chicken,
okay.
out of the cold food machine.
Okay.
But there's some good things in there for them to purchase. And they spend a lot of money. There's 49,000 people locked up in Illinois right now.
How many governors?
Now, just to let you know, when we started this process 2 years ago, there was 45,000. So we've gained that many inmates in the last 2 years.
It's a growth industry.
So I think the prison systems for Illinois is there to stay. and it's going to provide meaningful opportunities for employment for our blind individuals for years to come. And like I said, she wanted to touch on what's going to happen after the prisons. We still have 2 more years for this program to expand into the prisons. So after the 2 years, we're probably going to be looking at Great Lakes Naval Base. We had an opportunity that a federal location don't want us in, so we're going to do federal arbitration for that. But that one's going to make a blind manager several hundred thousand dollars a year. So, and that is Rock Island Arsenal. So that's the major opportunities that we're looking at right now.
Jacobson with a follow-up.
Yes.
I don't know how many facilities you have at present. I'm sure you do. So
90.
What do you, 50, 40, 60? 90. How many?
90.
90.
90, okay. Yes.
Now, you just offered all these young people a job out there.
Right.
Right. Do you have a plan, a timeline over the next 5 years to turn that 90 into 130, 40, 180? Is there a phase-in period? I hear you say you'd like to get Great Lakes Naval Base and Rock Island Arsenal and places like that, and that's good. When? Is there a timeline to get the prisons? Is there a plan, I guess, on the board?
The timeline for the prisons is 2 years.
Okay.
It's an automatic 2 years because whenever their current contracts run out, that's when we're able to take them on.
That's easy. That's a no-brainer.
Good. That's a no-brainer.
Yep.
Now, as far as the federal locations, Rock Island Arsenal, we were supposed to have been in there in February. But they've been throwing roadblocks in our way. And Nikki is aware of that.
What a surprise.
We're working on it.
Yep. So we've been working with them, trying to establish some type of relationship, some type of a middle road, but they're not willing to work with us, so we're just going to go to a federal arbitration. And that was decided by me just a couple days ago.
Excellent.
Yeah. Any other questions from the people out in the audience?
Jamal Powell?
Yes, sir.
I have a question. And is are there any plans in the future to look to expand into some of these commuter rail stations which are looking to add snack bars and convenience stands?
Repeat the question. So it goes
okay. I think you were referring to like the metro stations and the different areas that would have a snack bar, right?
Yes.
It all depends on how profitable it is. What we do as what we call the state licensing agency is we investigate every opportunity that's given to us. And if it's profitable, if there is no funding issues, if we can fund it, we're going to try our best to do it, as long as there are managers willing to operate the locations. A lot of times what we have is we have an opportunity, but a present manager doesn't want to operate it. What we're experiencing in our program right now is managers not wanting to do anything other than vending unless it is extremely profitable. And I think that's happening around the nation.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You've got facilities, I know, in New York that pay about $20,000 a year. That's almost sub-minimum wage. We don't work for sub-minimum wage anymore.
All right. So in the instance of the metro train stations, we would investigate those, but also it might take some bidding. And the way that we would bid something, it would be more favorable for a blind manager and not giving a whole bunch of profit to the Chicago Metropolitan Organization, whoever is in charge of the metro system. So we would always bid thinking the blind manager needs to make a living. We would probably bid like a 10 or 15%, whereas other places might bid like a 20, 25%. We can't win in that arena. Any other questions?
I think we're going
to. Okay.
Oops, sorry, Raven. Actually, I'm gonna hold off on the rest of the questions till the end, and I realize I started the line of questions, but I wanted to see what Raven would tell me about future opportunities.
And I like some of the answers because I do think we do need to look to some of these very lucrative spots. You've got to have a way for up-and-coming managers and managers who are willing to put a lot of work in and work their way up to have locations that are in the upper tier in income and upper tier in terms of what's expected. All right. I'm going to take these out of order, so you guys are all ready, right? All ready? They're all looking at it. Okay. I've asked, and I think I'll take Ed Birmingham next. Ed is the president of the Illinois Association of Blind Merchants, and he is a vendor, and he's going to talk about IABM, but I think he's also going to talk about his own experiences in the program. You want to do the same?
Yeah, I'm going to come up here. Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going to fall off over there.
Oh, I know. Okay. I did yesterday.
I'm going to come up here to the podium because if I say anything out of line, Nikki's going to elbow me and knock me right off the stage. I'm like on the edge of the thing. As I was saying earlier, I have been a vendor for 30 years. I'll tell you one thing, and I'm going to leave this for somebody who's smarter than I am. Somebody probably really needs to explain what the Randolph Shepherd program is. There's a long history behind it. I suck in history, I'll be honest with you, so I don't want to stand up here and give you bad information, so I'll let one of these smarter guys do that. But anyway, I'll tell you a few things about the vending program before I get into IABM. In my 30 years, I've had a total of 3 locations. I don't move around very often. I spent a year and a half out at the Howe Developmental Center in Tinley Park. Then I spent 20 years out at Oak Forest Hospital. And the last 8-9 years, I've been downtown at the Metcalf Federal Building. One thing you need to know about being a vendor is you better like getting up early in the morning. Out of my 30 years, I would say 28 of those years, I've been getting up at 3:30 in the morning. When I worked at Oak Forest, I started at 5 a.m., got home about 3:30. When I worked downtown, I'd take the 5:20 train, so I start at 6. That's when I get downtown.
It's like vacation.
And then I'm out by 7:30. No. although I will tell you this, on the subject of prisons, I have a federal prison, which is one of my satellite locations. And I'll be honest with you, 65% of my sales come out of that federal prison. Like Raven said, they're very lucrative. I only work there 6 hours a week. We're allowed in there 2 hours a day on Monday, 2 hours on Wednesday, 2 hours on Friday. And yet that's 65% of my sales. So needless to say, that has afforded me the opportunity to, and I heard one of the students say this earlier, a chance to give back. And this program's been very good to me. I've been able to buy a couple of houses. My wife, she drives really a nice car. Take real good care of her. She's got all kinds of stuff. She's got an iPad, for crying out loud. I don't have an iPad.
She can get one.
So take real good care of her. Been able to put 2.5 kids through college. My youngest one is a sophomore, so she's got a little bit of time left. But the program has been very, very good to me. I've been very fortunate. As somebody mentioned earlier, I was a paramedic on the Chicago Fire Department for about 8 years, and then my eye problem struck me just kind of out of the blue. Within 1 year, I went from having 20/20 vision to being legally blind. So needless to say, when that happened, I was almost at a loss of, you know, what am I going to do? At that time, I was actually engaged to be married. I thought, oh, this is great. I'm getting married. I don't have a job. What a loser I am. Fortunately, somebody, and I wish I could remember who, told me to go see a VR counselor. I went and saw a guy by the name of Jim Rhodes. I don't know if any of you know him. He was out in the south suburbs.
Oh, boy.
I'm not sure that was such a positive reaction. Did he make you give him $1,000 like he told me I had to do? Maybe. No, he really didn't do that. Anyway, he pointed me towards the vending program. I entered it very skeptically. I was very skeptical about how it was all going to turn out, and it's actually been the best thing that's ever happened to me. I've been very fortunate. So I would strongly recommend it, especially for you young people.
Did you lose your boom?
Anyway, this is Ed.
I'm sound.
Your boom's got
you. Okay, there you go. Thank you. All right, better not touch that stuff anymore. Where was I? Anybody remember?
Jim Rose.
No. You're on your way out. Closing statement.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to IABM because I actually forgot what I was going to say. At IABM, what we do is several things. We are kind of an insurance provider for the, actually the insurance middleman, I would say. We're not the provider. We have a gentleman we've had a long-standing relationship with by the name of Bob Dean. He takes care of all the insurance for us. What we do is basically do the collections, pay the premiums. Our vendors are able to buy life insurance through Bob. We have a dental insurance program with Delta Dental. And we also have a short-term disability program with Aflac. And the nice thing about the Aflac program is it only costs the vendors $120 a year. The remaining part of the premium comes out of our, what we pay into set-aside. So it's a great deal. It'll pay if the vendors get hurt and can't work, just like the commercial says. They can collect up to $1,000 a month up to 1 year. So it's a good thing to have. We're very fortunate to have it. We also do a lot of advocacy work. We work very closely with the Illinois Committee of Blind Vendors. We do some social events. We do a Christmas party for the kids down at the Illinois School for the visually impaired. I'm sure many of you are familiar with that. Actually, Jesse Rogers does the majority of the work. Okay, Sharon does. Dave Crawford and his family do a lot of the work. So we do a lot of different things. We basically just, like I said, going back to the whole giving back thing. We just try to do whatever we can, whenever we can. And we try to keep Raven in line. As you can see, he likes to wander. So we got to keep a tight rope on him, make sure he doesn't get out of line. Not quite as tight as John Gorman, but... And then we jab at each other. But anyway, that's pretty much my story, and I'm sticking to it. And just real quick, I want to end with this, because I cannot tell you, and I'm speaking as a parent now, and that student luncheon, you guys got some really, really smart kids. I mean, the future of NFBI is just in tremendous hands. I know... Those young people were just blowing me away. I mean, and I'm dead serious when I mean it. We really do need some younger people in our program because, unfortunately, the majority of our vendors, not only do they belong to IABM, but they also belong to AARP. So we need some young vendors. So please give us a call. We could use the help. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Denise, you want to pull a couple door prizes before I put the next vendor on?
Yes, Madam President.
Well, he told me you had some. See, I like to surprise her, too. She usually surprises me, but...
Okay. This next prize is a hot plate and a car organizer pouch. That is going to go... to Dan Dwyer.
Dan Dwyer, I bet he's here. Did we find him? Dan, are you here?
Is he here?
Yes. Roberta says she sees him. Do another one.
All right, the next one is a Proctor Silex can opener, and it's donated by the Glickmans, and I guess there's a... T-shirt of some kind here. There's also an NFB mug, and there's also an audio book, and that is going to go to Ken Staley.
Ken? I know, he's the candy man. The candy man.
I'm so sorry I picked your name for your White Sox bashing during this convention.
That's right. Thank you.
Some of us can sing about the Cubs. Some of us can't sing at all. Our next speaker is a gentleman who I really didn't know a whole lot about until I became president of this organization and started by reaching out to key people who were in blindness all over the state. Another gentleman that when I called was happy to hear from me and happy to meet with me. His name is John Gordon, and he is the chairman of the Illinois Committee of Blind Vendors. John, do you want to talk from the podium? John?
Yes,
hi. I'm just making sure I know where you're from.
Yeah, there is a microphone in front of my chair.
Yeah, you can use whichever one you want.
Yeah.
Now that you're up, though, you may as well.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's going to be too low for you. I forgot how low you are.
Let's see. Okay. So, anyway, I could hold the microphone like this. Yeah, you're okay? Okay. They do have good sound people here. Your person did it.
Thank you, Lord.
Okay. No, it's Raven, the new sound man. Anyway, my name is John Gordon, and thank you very much. And because I won't have another opportunity to do it, I will tell you that it started actually a long time prior to a year ago when we changed over, and I could finally say, I had a hard time getting the words out of my mouth, honestly, like 9 months ago. But before we changed and became Federationists, yeah, see, that came out even smoothly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway,
Patty Chang, Miss Chang, she reached out actually a long time ago, and you guys heard Raven up here talk about Public Law 2421, the Blind Vendor Act, the piece of legislation which gave us absolute priority on state property, even when we belong to the other side. NFBI stood in our corner and made phone calls and came to legislative hearings. And we remember that, and we appreciate that. Thank you.
Yep.
You see, I have to say that that none of this, although it seems to some people like this happened overnight, but it actually started a long time ago, and it actually took several years, at least from my perspective. Me and Mr. Gekos, who you will hear from, used to both serve together on the other side a long, long time ago.
Oh my God, yeah.
And sorry, Nikki. But Nikki Gekos.
You can out him if you want.
Nikki Gekos reached out to me several years ago, and we spoke on and off. And although we didn't talk a whole lot about affiliations, we talked about things that were good for our communities as a whole. So it started a long time ago, and honestly, just making the transition 9 months ago, just what I have seen in the short time on things that start in Baltimore and come all the way down to this level, I am not at all dissatisfied and happy that we have made the change. Anyway, as Patty said, I'm the chairman of the Illinois Committee of Blind Vendors, and what that means is I head up a committee that is part of the 1974 amendments to the Randolph-Shepard Act, and I've been in that position for, I don't know for sure, I want to say 18 years, but maybe it's 25, I think 18 years. Or around, yeah, I think right around that amount of time. But I work with Raven very closely. And basically, in a nutshell, what the law provides for is it allows the elected committee, a group of self-employed blind people in the Randolph-Shepard program, to actively participate with the state licensing agency on program and policy issues. I will tell you, we never have to raise that flag in Illinois, as Mr. Raven Pulliam has always been more than open and upfront with us, and we work together as a team almost all the time. So that is refreshing. because I don't want to be real redundant, I think it's important for you to know, especially as young people, as Raven said, and surely when I lost my sight, I'm going to tell you a little story that you might appreciate, if any of you actually wonder if God has a sense of humor. I was kind of a bad kid, you know, just an incorrigible type, if you know what I mean. In fact, in 1974, at 12 years old, the court found me to be incorrigible and made me a ward of the state. My kids sometimes ask me what that means. I say, that means the judge is your new legal guardian. Anyway, I continued having my share of problems. You know, when I was about, 17 or 18 years old, I got in some trouble with the law out in DuPage County, and when I got out, went to court. I think they put me on probation. I went into the snack bar in the court building, and as I went up to the register, there was a sign, and it said, "Please state all purchases. Cashier is visually impaired," and I'm like, what's with this? So I rattle a bag of chips, you know, make a little noise, and gentleman turns around real quick. Anyway, then I realized he was blind. Well, my day kind of ended. But, you know, I didn't do so well on probation because they told me I had to stay out of trouble for that length of time. Anyway, they called me in for something called resentencing. But before I got there, I had got into a fight and got shot, and that's how I lost my vision. So by the time I made it back to court, I was now blind. And I, of course, the state's attorney deferred all everything based on what took place. But anyway, interestingly enough, some of you might remember this gentleman. His name was Bob Abramson. He was the blind vendor out there in DuPage County, so I actually got the opportunity to know him after becoming a blind vendor. But I will tell you that it has really brought things out in me that I never knew I probably possessed, and also continually points out my shortfalls. But it has been an incredible opportunity, and really the sky is the limit on what you can earn. I do kind of, I guess from Patty's perspective, we all do. We wonder what our next road will be in creating opportunities. It's so unfortunate that we have to spend so much of our time fighting other portions of the disability community that want to take our opportunities from us. But we do have to spend a lot of time doing that. I just want you guys to know that. And even sometimes what I am finding out now, Ability One contractors, even when they represent a large blind population, oftentimes they want to take these opportunities that have been traditionally ours and put them out for their own good. And it's not usually the good of blind people under many of those Ability One contracts. Anyway, thank you very much, and thank you once again, Patty, for having us here.
John, the president just gave me the privilege of following you up for about 45 seconds. That'll be a joy for me. I had the joy in New York for about 150 years of having the chairman job that you have, or maybe it seemed like 150 years. And it occurred to me while you were speaking, and I think I alluded to it this morning, that the whole concept of active participation actively participate in developing significant administrative policy for promotion of transfer policy, training, all that other all that other stuff, guys. You never forget the rules. Having said that, that came out of a guy's head in Iowa named Kenneth Jernigan. We owe him our active participation. Also, I'm remembering when Nikki came over. That was a longer time ago than now. And I remember you reminded me when we met in the hall earlier of a meeting we had in Baltimore while I was on the National Association of Blind Merchants Board back in 1998 in Dr. Maurer's office in Baltimore with Dr. Jernigan present, showing how far back this is going, folks. Talking about us getting back together. I'm glad you're here. All I can say to folks who come from RSVA or from our wayward cousins, welcome home.
Let's see. We need this mic back down to some reasonable height. John's about a foot taller than I am, and I am not short. I think that's good. I neglected to congratulate John on his recent election to the National Association of Blind Merchants Board, so let's all do it.
Now you can have my seat. All right.
Denise, can we get a couple of door prizes for that?
Okay, this door prize is going to be a cheese grater, a lady scarf, and an 8 gigabyte flash drive.
8 gigabyte lady.
Yes. And
I want to figure out how you put all three of those together, but okay.
That goes to Leanne.
Leanne is right here. I know she's here. Do another one.
No. The kudos go to Leanne on that.
Oh, for putting them together. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm not up with the program.
Actually,
yet.
This might be fitting because it's going to go to Donald Anderson.
Yeah, Donnie Anderson. Where are you, Donnie?
He looks good in a woman's scarf.
Donnie, are you here?
Is enough for Donnie.
Is he here?
Donnie.
We call him
Donnie.
Martha
Donnie's
Stewart.
Here. John.
I want Donnie to wear the scarf.
John, is it okay if I tell the story I told you in the hall?
That would be wonderful. That would be great.
Okay.
This is going to be good, okay. I can tell.
I think the year was 2000 or 2001. Donnie, are you don't leave the room, Donnie.
Right here.
Oh, good. Even better. Even
nice
better.
To see you, Carl.
All right, man. Well, see if you still say that when I'm done. It was either 2000 or 2001. RSA held a national conference for vendors. NCSAB participated, ACB, NFB, the Merchants Division, RSVA. Everybody and his dog was there. And we were going on the federal dime, so we all went. You know, why not? New Orleans, you know, it's a federal party. You don't work after 5 o'clock. What's the difference? It's New Orleans. Anyway, we had an opening ceremony, opening speeches from representatives of each organization. And I don't know how the order was chosen, but at any rate, RSVA got to come before we did. And Donnie spoke on behalf of RSVA that day. And Donnie took the floor, and he observed the various and sundry different groups of people that were out there on the floor. And we, of course, were there, and so was everybody else. And he said, I'm noticing around the room here that there are Klingons, and that there are Romulans, and there are Vulcans, and there are people from Earth, and there are people from other planets. And it occurs to me what we really need here is the Federation. And we went nuts. Yeah, Donnie. Yeah. You're right, man.
You
you're
betcha.
Right. 100%, man. Thank you. And Donnie, welcome home.
Oh, that was
welcome
great.
Home. Welcome home. Was it 98?
No,
I forget
no.
what year. No.
Hey.
Oh, 98 at Doc Jernigan. Yeah, sure.
Connie Davis, are you in the room? Would you please get Donnie to put the scarf on, take a picture of Donnie so we can put it up on the website?
Yeah, with the cheese grater.
The cheese grater working in the kitchen.
I can run that cheese grater across his neck.
You see, now, there are some people, when you meet them, you just decide you like them or you don't. Now, Donnie's one of those guys. You like him or you don't. I love him. You crack me up.
I hate him.
Could somebody run some paper cups to the head table, please?
Oh, yeah, I forgot, Carl. Let's do another door prize before I put our next speaker.
Okay, the next door prize is going to be a hot plate, headphones, an audiobook, and an NFB mug, and that is going to go to Margaret DeWall.
Margaret DeWall. Not here.
Okay.
Well, you're picking the next one. I want to tell people, this is attention for students. Those of you that are scholarship winners, convention scholarship winners, I have comps, a lot of memberships. Can't remember exactly who all that goes to. But if you're joining IABS or if IABS is comping your membership, you need to go back and see somebody at the IABS table. Who's back there? Rose, Ronza? I hear Ronza. Go back and see Ronza so we make sure we get your contact info. Denise, go ahead.
Okay, this one is going to go to Bernetta Hudson, and she is working in Kid Camp.
Bernetta Hudson does get it. She is in Kid Camp. I know she is.
We got your picture, Patty.
Did you get my picture? Nani, did you cooperate? Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Trust me, he'll get me back for that one.
Wait till you see his formal at the banquet tonight.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, he'll find a way. You know, I was just saying how you meet some people and you really connect. I don't know this next speaker very well, but I genuinely, he and his wife are just such warm people. When I met them, I instantly liked them, sat with them on the boat ride for quite a while. So I'm going to put Jess Rogers on. I hope you all like him as much as I do.
Yeah.
You can do the podium, whatever you like. What's your preference?
Okay, I'll stand.
It's right
there.
On your left if you want.
It's on my left here. Okay, can you hear me? Yeah, I guess you can. Well, thanks for having us here. Hasn't Patty done a good job?
Yeah.
Huh? Well, I'm Jess Rogers. I live in the Springfield area. I alluded to here a while back about having the panic attacks and stuff. I tried to go back to work in 1988, and it didn't work out. And finally, by 99, the administrator at the time, before Raven, said, why don't you come and work part-time? We'll just give you a little part-time job and see if you can handle it. So I did that. I had 12 machines to take care of, 4 hours a day. Just going to work and back was the job. Filling the machines wasn't anything. So I did that for a little while. Next thing I know, they had another location that needed looked at. 23 machines, downtown Springfield. I said, oh, my God, handle downtown. Several buildings. Well, I ended up bidding on that location and got it and built it to 120 machines. And ran that for almost 5 years. And then a rest area came up, and I bid on it. 6 machines. Now I know why they call it a rest area. But actually, I got that one. And I've been running that one for about 5 years now, and one of the correctional facilities is coming up here before too long. So I was awarded it just here, 3 weeks ago, a month ago. And I have the correctional centers down in Lincoln, Illinois. Well, I know it was mentioned that some of yous are 30 years old and younger. Well, I'm 30 years old twice and a little more. So I don't want to work the rest of my life, but I do enjoy helping other managers, mentoring other managers, doing whatever is needed. I do have a couple grandsons that have the same eye disease I have, retinitis pigmentosis, and they're here.
Yeah.
Hey.
Woo-hoo!
Tyler and Steve. And my wife Sharon's here, of course. And I got to keep her happy because she's always buying nice cars. And she had. You'll have to talk.
I'm going to get your bicycle next.
You'll have to talk to Ed about that. But if I want to continue riding in these cars, I have to be sweet to her. This has been going on for 40 years, too. So, but, you know, we all have to work together. I couldn't tell you. I lost count of how many hats that Raven wears. I lost count on how many hours a day John Gordon puts in for us. Ed Birmingham just kicks butt in the office up there to do everything he can for the blind vendors. We all help each other. Nikki has a hotline. We can't wait every week to call the hotline number for him. The committee has a hotline number. John Gordon's on there every Wednesday morning, sometimes Thursday. But I've been in this since 99, and I have never seen the state license agency work with the Committee of Blind Vendors as well as it has, all for the benefit of the blind vendors. And we do have a lot of openings coming, and we do need a lot of new blood. And I encourage everybody, if you're going to go to college, go in business. You can do it yourself. Years ago, I listened to a spew on television, infomercial, from Carlton Sheets. I don't know, does anybody remember him?
Yeah.
Okay. That's been 16 years ago. Well, we still got five houses. We sold a bunch of our stuff, but we still got five houses, no money down. Do whatever you got to do to get it financed. But the biggest boost in our life has been with me working with the blind vendors. And it also gives you a sense of going to work every day, getting work ethics in line, and having some goals, some short-term ones and some long-term ones. And that's where you need to be. Set your goals high, but within grasp. When you get your small goals met, set some new ones. I'll be honest with you, I met them all. Thank you very much.
All right, you're the anchor.
Mary Lou, are you in the room?
Yes, I am.
I'm not going to ask you to come up here, but I am going to ask people to recognize Mary Lou. Mary Lou has been working for this day for decades, according to John Gordon. He says she mentored him a long, long time ago and was trying to get him in the Federation back then. So can we give Mary Lou a hand?
Yeah.
Denise, are you ready? Let's do two.
Two. We have the desk organizer set and a tray. And we also have $20 from the Kankakee Heartland chapter. And that is going to go to Robert Gardner.
Bob Gardner. Is he working somewhere else?
Watching the kids.
No, he's not. I know that. Next.
Okay. Charlene Elder.
Charlene?
Charlene.
Try it again.
Okay.
Take literature from the back tables. Roberta does not want to take it home. We've got NFB literature. We've got all the stuff from the vendors and the people who want to sell to us that were here yesterday.
This goes to...
We have texts to give cards to.
Gaia Acarino. Uh-huh.
Gaia? She's here. We can do one more, Denise. Make sure that you bring your banquet tickets to banquet with you tonight.
We are tight on numbers, so if you don't have a ticket and I can't remember that you should have one, you won't eat.
Okay, we have a Wilson digital recorder and an audio book, and that's going to go to the one and the only Carl Jacobson.
Oh, I know where he is.
Can you find us some cups for water? Cups.
I found Carl.
I think he's here. Cups?
And FBI and IABS have T-shirts for sale.
Yeah, send over a paper cup with them.
They are. Can somebody please get Carl a paper cup? Please, 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 please. Monza, would you make sure he gets a paper cup? Thank you. And FBI. He's going to start drinking out of the pitcher, he says. NFBI and IOs have T-shirts for sale. These are black on white or white on black. They are $10 a piece. The front of them say, I am who I am. I don't need your approval, in the shape of an eye chart. And on the back in big puff paint braille is NFB. They're awesome shirts. They're really cute.
Just one. Oh. He wanted one, too. I mean, I don't mind.
Carl, you're making me laugh over the mic.
The closest it cleared up, so it's okay.
When we're done at 5, we will need to clear this room so that we can have the hotel get ready for our banquet. We will have hospitality in Michigan at 6 o'clock, otherwise known as a cash bar, from 6 to 7. Banquet will be 7 to 10. We will have cash bar back in the Michigan room from 10 to 12. Okay. Nicholas, are you about ready?
Yeah, he's got his water. He's ready now.
Yeah, this.
We'll go for another half hour.
Our next speaker now has his water.
The two of us are ready.
So I guess he and Carl are ready for anything now. I don't think our next speaker needs a lot of introduction, other than for me to say that he is not just a merchant, but the president of our National Association of Blind Merchants. So if you would be sure to include a little bit of background on Randolph Shepherd, Nikki, I'll give the mic to you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Yo!
Yo. I don't know what they're talking about with that RSVA stuff. I have no idea what they're talking about. Anyway, you know, hearing all this stuff about the prisons, it reminds me of a story about two guys were sitting in prison, and the one guy said to the other guy, you know, the food used to be a lot better in here when you were governor of this state. Pope Benedict last year said during Lent that we should do a fast on words, that we need to listen more, that it's becoming a world of technology with texting and everything, and we're not listening. Just like right now. Just like right now. But one thing that gets me very excited is coming to a convention like this and listening to the enthusiasm of the students last night during the American Idol, Illinois Idol contest. It was an honor to do it, and I know I was a little mean, but that's what Anil told me to do, and I always do what Anil tells me to do. Because I listen. And at National Convention, I went to the Students Division meeting. I heard there was going to be a lot of excitement with the elections and everything, and it was. The enthusiasm was great. So I hope that you listen to what you've heard today, and I hope you learn to listen tonight at the banquet to Carl's speech and everything that's gone on here, and I hope that you listen because I continue to learn from these conventions and being part of the National Federation of the Blind. You know, Carl and I go way back, and he is from New York.
Yeah.
Who won the Super Bowl last year?
What? New Jersey.
The New York Giants, right? But where do they play? Where do they play?
What?
They play in New Jersey.
Right. And they're too embarrassed to call themselves New Jersey. Ah,
please.
New York has one NFL team.
Jeez, I can't get through a story or a joke. Jeez. And then there's a famous song, Chicago, and there's a better one known called New York, New York. And who sang those? And where's he from?
New Jersey.
New Jersey. That's right. And you know New Jersey's called the Garden State. You know that? And you know why? Because if you come, you better guard your wallet and guard your life and guard your car, I'll tell you.
Oh,
And I can tell you one thing. The economy has been very bad in New Jersey. Just last week, the mafia laid off two judges.
Oh, my God.
You better finish that up before you get home.
But Patty talked about a year ago, we were excited that I came here to Illinois and that the Illinois Blind Vendors became a merchants division. And it was very exciting to flip a state like that and then become a part of it. And we're very excited that they've come. That's it, baby. To, that.
They play that at the end of a Yankee game when they win.
That they came to Washington Seminar and they came to National Convention and that many are here today. In fact, the exciting thing is that 3 weeks from today, we're all coming back to Illinois because the Illinois Blind Vendors are having their annual conference like they did last year. This year is called BEST. Business Excellence Starts Today. And on the agenda will be your president, Patty Chang, myself, Kevin Worley, Jim Gashel, Terry Smith from the national office, and Susan Gashel. So that's a pretty good agenda, huh, after 1 year?
That's a great agenda.
And if you'd like to come by and be part of that and listen on Friday afternoon, it's going to be here at the DoubleTree at Hilton at the airport, at O'Hare Airport on River Road. And we'd love to see part of you come and listen to that. It's a great day of an agenda on Friday, and we'd love to have part some of you come and listen to that. So that'd be exciting. Mark Twain said that if you want to be happy for a day, go fishing. If you want to be happy for a month, get married. If you want to be happy for a year, inherit money. And if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, help others. And I think one of the things that's excited me about, again, this meeting and hearing Karen talk. And Karen, you said it was free travel?
No.
You know, I got to tell you, you work awful hard. And what you do is not free. And God bless people like you and the Federation for doing that. So you may get an airline ticket, but you work very hard at doing that. And that secretary job you take, I knew that was real tough because nobody wants that secretary job.
Oh, yeah.
But it's been exciting for me. A person who lost his sight at 18, just on his 18th birthday, who had a brand new Camaro, had 458 miles on it, football scholarship, and I thought life didn't get better. And then I couldn't see. 31 days in the hospital, and I still couldn't see, but I always thought I could see again. And I was one of those blind guys that didn't want to carry a cane and didn't want to learn Braille and didn't want to do that because I wasn't a blind guy. But it took a long time to realize that, you know what? It was okay to carry a cane, and it's okay to be a blind guy. And it. Yeah. And it took that time for me to do that, and it's became when I became a member of the National Federation of the Blind. So the day that, I've been to 16 conventions in a row and won't miss one again, and I have a house on the Jersey Shore, and for me to leave the beaches and come to a national convention, I don't even think about it. My grandkids get a little upset with me, but that's okay. They'll come to national convention one day, too. So in a couple of weeks, one thing is, as the national president, and I am a blind vendor, and we use the word vendor today. We've used the word operator. We've used the word manager. We've used the word merchant. But I got to tell you one thing. The word that we go by now is entrepreneur, because if you heard these stories today and you talk to blind people that are in Randall Shepherd, you know it's an entrepreneurial program, and you should think of it like that. And I know we've talked to the kids today, and we want you to be part of it. Think of it as an entrepreneur program, because it really is. People that make the kind of money that people make is not because you're a vendor or an operator. It's because you're an entrepreneur. So remember that. And one of the options, you know, and I'll tell you that I run what is the largest post office in the United States. I have 70 vending machines, a cafe that's open 5.5 days, and a full-service Dunkin' Donuts that's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, inside the Postal Service. Just so you know, the Dunkin' Donuts this year will do $700,000 in sales. $700,000 in sales this year. That's how busy the Dunkin' Donuts is, and that's the kind of work that we do. But the good thing is, by being an entrepreneur and being president of this organization, it gives me the opportunity to travel and get around and come to conventions like this, come back here in 3 weeks for the BEST conference. And in 2 weeks, I'll be going to Texas to talk to the Texas Business Enterprises of Texas. And one of the things I'm going to talk about is a recipe for success. And part of that, you can change it up all the time like you do recipes, but I'm going to talk about passion. And I get it, I'll be real excited after the passion in this room over the past couple of days. And I talk about integrity, and I talk about surrounding yourself with good people. And who could get better than the people in this room and the people that you've met and the people at National Convention and the friends that you have and all that type of thing. But it reminds me of a story. President Obama was over in England, and he was meeting with the Queen. And he said to the Queen, "You've been in power a long time. How do you do it?" And she said, "I surround myself with good people." And she asked Tony Blair to come in. And she said, "Tony, if your mother and father had a baby and it wasn't your brother and it wasn't your sister, who would it be?" And he said, "Well, that would be me." So President Obama came back to the United States and he had the Vice President Joe Biden come in and he said, "Vice President, if your mother and father had a baby and it wasn't your brother and it wasn't your sister, who would it be?" He said, "Well, geez, I don't know. I'll have to think about that." So he's down the hall and he's in the restroom and he sees Colin Powell. He was visiting the White House. And he said, "Well, he's a smart man. I'll ask Colin Powell." And he said, "General Powell," he said, "if your mother and father had a baby and it wasn't your brother and wasn't your sister, who would it be?" He said, "Well, that would be me." So the vice president got all excited and he ran back into the Oval Office. He said, "Mr. President, I have the answer. It's Colin Powell." He said, "No, you're not. It's Tony Blair." Surround yourself with good people. Surround yourself with good people. And don't forget to vote next month. It's very important. Very big election. Thank you, everyone. It's been great to be here in Illinois. I'll see you all later.
Speaking of voting, is Congressman Joukowsky in the room yet?
Yeah, I am.
You are? How's that for timing?
Yeah.
Come on up, Congressman. Come on up here, please. If you're not behind me, come on up. Come on up. Now, I want the vendors to stay up here. We'll come back to you, okay? Frankly, you just got outranked. Hi, good to see you again. Hello. Congressman Joukowsky has been a friend of the Federation since she was first elected. We have asked her to co-sign into many of our bills. She almost always does. She, in fact, has been the lead sponsor on at least one of our bills. When I asked if she could come to this convention, her office was very clear that she would if she could. So I'm not going to take too much time because I want you to hear from her. So give her a big hand. Thank you.
You.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. You know, Patty, it was about the second that you said asked if I'm in the room that I just walked in the door. So my timing so far has been really good. And I want to thank you very much, Patty. You were the one that invited me, and I really thank you. It is my pleasure to be here with all of you today, and I wanted to thank you so much for being warriors in the fight for disability rights, for inclusion, and for independence. I want to talk to you today about a couple of things. The benefits of Obamacare for people with disabilities, the technology Bill of Rights, and employment. Now, I ran for Congress. I was in the state legislature for 8 years and then ran for Congress. And my main goal in getting into public service really was, I would say my number one priority was guaranteeing every American access to comprehensive, quality, and affordable health care. I always felt that it was an embarrassment, really, that the United States of America is the only industrialized nation in the world whose citizens do not have a right to health care. Some call it big government. I call it common sense. And one of the early lessons that I learned was that in order to be successful, what we build has to work for everyone, including people with disabilities and ongoing health care needs. You know, it's not good enough, to create a healthcare system that works for healthy people who only need an annual physical exam every year. And frankly, that's kind of what we have, because insurance is really only for healthy people right now. We need to build a system that works for those who really depend on getting access to comprehensive medical services. So one of the proudest moments in my life, I have to tell you, was to watch Obamacare. And yes, that's what I proudly call it, because Obama does care. And watching him sign it into law. Right. I mean, what a great day that was. So this is a law that works for everyone, especially, I think, persons with disabilities. So full implementation of the law, and this, when I think about this and the stress and the worry that it will relieve, means no more pre-existing condition exclusions, no more premium rating based on health status, no more insurance companies refusing to provide coverage, and no more annual or lifetime limits. I mean, it just, isn't that great?
Yeah.
Now, in terms of delivering health care, it will mean improving efficiencies. There are insurance companies right now, well, not right now, because I'll tell you about that, but there are insurance companies that have been spending 30 to 40% out of every single premium dollar on items other than medical services, advertising, marketing, bureaucracy, CEO salaries. But under Obamacare, and this provision is in effect right now, all of us know that at least 80 cents out of every dollar we pay for goes into health care. And already, nearly 13 million Americans have received $1.1 billion in rebates because their insurance companies didn't meet that test. And that includes over 299,000 Illinoisans who got an average rebate this summer of $380 per family. Does anybody in this room get a rebate? Well, okay. For people with disabilities on Medicare, Obamacare means real help in the donut hole and lower costs for premiums achieved by getting rid of overpayments to Medicare Advantage plans, eliminating fraud and abuse, and pushing efficiency, not cutting benefits or increasing cost sharing. Now, I want to talk a second about the debate that we heard from the president and Mitt Romney, who, and I was sorry that the president didn't answer this one, because Mr. Romney, Governor Romney, said it three times, that the Democrats and that the president cut $716 billion out of Medicare. Well, what we did do, what we said was that Medicare Advantage plans, these are private insurance plans, they came to the Congress, I'm on the health subcommittee, and they said, look, the private insurance company said, we will provide for Medicare beneficiaries a plan that costs less than Medicare if you'll let us compete. We said, great, God bless you. If you're going to provide the same services for less, go ahead and do it. Then they came back and said, you know, we can't really do it for less, so we'll do it for the same amount that Medicare pays. And we said, okay, rather than disrupt beneficiaries, go ahead, you'll do it. Well, by the time Obamacare passed, we had about an average subsidy for private insurance companies on their Medicare Advantage plans. They were charging taxpayers 117% of Medicare costs. And finally, we said, no, we're not going to do that. If you're going to offer a plan to Medicare beneficiaries, we're not going to give you more than Medicare pays. So we saved a lot of money that way. And number two, we really beefed up the fraud division. Just last year alone, we saved $4 billion in going after providers, mainly home health care, by the way. Well, there's a lot of scams. I'm not blaming the whole industry, but there's a lot of scams going on. And we saved $4 billion. So those two things helped us save $716 billion from Medicare while improving benefits. We didn't cut from Medicare. We improved benefits and extended the life of Medicare for another 8 years. Now, the one thing, you know, for people with disabilities, many of whom don't have other retiree benefits and either can't get or can't afford Medicare supplementals, it's even more critical that we improve and not cut benefits. So, you know, we need to make sure that the benefits are even better. Now, as for Medicaid, we are both expanding who gets coverage, improving benefits to include preventive services, and increasing payments for primary care providers. This is important because we want docs to take Medicaid patients. Illinois is going to take advantage of the ability to cover all low-income Illinoisans, regardless of whether they have children or not. That's new. With the federal government picking up 100% of the tab for 3 years, I think it is, and then 90% thereafter. And we provide more initiative to promote home and community-based services, reducing the institutional bias. We do not. If people want to be in their homes or be in the communities, we do not want them to be forced into nursing homes. The current Republican leadership, and I have to say in candidates too, even for the highest office, want nothing more than to repeal Obamacare. They promise it, taking away its protections. And then they go even farther. They want to block grant Medicaid, giving governors even more flexibility to increase cost sharing and cut benefits. And there's plenty of governors who would love to get their hands on that Medicaid pot of money and then use it for other things. And if that's not enough, they want to turn Medicare into a voucher. You've heard about that.
Yeah.
Now, you hear them talk. If you listen to the debate, you hear them talk about, well, we're not going to hurt anybody over 55 years old, which of course isn't true because if they repeal Obamacare, they will. But you never hear them talking about not hurting anyone who is on Medicare, not because of their age, but because of their disability status. They have not made a promise to people with disabilities on Medicare that are under 65 years old, that are 65 years old and older, that they aren't going to cut those benefits. So I'm waiting to hear that, and we're going to demand it. And besides that, we're not going to let them turn Medicare into a voucher program. Imagine. Well, I mean, really. You know, they like to talk about big government. I have never had one person coming into my office and saying, you know what I'd really like? Instead of my guaranteed Medicare and this card that I have in my hand, boy, I wish they'd give me a voucher so I could go out. You know, there's so many insurance companies out there just dying to cover me, you know, so which, you know, they aren't. So now I want to talk a little bit about how the world is changing and what that means for blind individuals when it comes to the rapid advances in technology. Now, some of those advances have improved our lives in many ways, but the recent trend in touch screens and visual displays have meant that everyday products from consumer electronics and home appliances to airport kiosks and office technology are being made with complex user interfaces that are inaccessible to people who are blind or have low vision. So tactile methods... It's true, right? Tactile methods of use, such as knobs and buttons, are being replaced. With no way to easily discern the settings on these products, blind people are challenged to find an accessible new stove, a microwave, fax machine, or cell phone. Now, these products have become an essential part of our lifestyle, so inaccessibility to them poses a major challenge to a blind person's independence and productivity. If blind persons can't operate basic office equipment, they will face barriers joining the workforce or maintaining an existing job, and those who don't have access to kiosks face barriers when trying to check in at the airport or purchase a train ticket. There are many popular, inexpensive, I want to underscore, mechanisms that manufacturers can include in their products to make them accessible to everyone. Was there a problem? However, despite the emergence of easy solutions such as text-to-speech technology, most manufacturers don't include these systems in their products. So last Congress, thanks to the National Federation for the Blind, because this issue was brought to me, and that's why I introduced the Technology Bill of Rights to provide... Yeah. And I have to tell you, before you brought this issue to me, I was actually blind to the issue. I was blind to the issue. You know, if you don't have severe vision problems or you are not blind, this issue might not jump out at you. So thank you very much for bringing that issue to me. So what the bill would do would mandate that manufacturers of consumer electronics, home appliances, kiosks, and electronic office technology design their products with non-visual means of use so that they are accessible to all consumers. And of course, there is not a one-size-fits-all solution, which is why the bill would first mandate a study. Now, I'm not talking about a forever study. I don't believe in studying issues forever. Involving all stakeholders, that means you included, to determine how these products can be made accessible before establishing the standards. Now, unfortunately, in this Congress, this 112th Congress, we were unable to identify even one Republican to join me in moving this initiative forward. But I'm not giving up. We are eager to continue working on this important matter, and we need to develop a strategy to go after some of the representatives in districts, Republican and Democrat. You can help do that.
Take back the House.
Well, that's for one thing. If we take back the House of Representatives, I just left my friend, Nancy Pelosi, and she would agree with that assessment. But even if we haven't passed legislation, there are other avenues. For example, the Obama administration is right on time with developing regulations for communications technologies, as they were directed by the 2010 passage of the 21st Century Telecommunication and Visible Accessibility Act, Accessibility Act, and the White House has undertaken the, quote, 508 strategic plan, unquote, to help federal agencies better comply with Section 508. And the Department of Transportation is also developing accessibility guidelines for automated airport kiosks and airline websites. So we are seeing some progress, even without the legislation. Now, I want to address one other issue, and that is the employment of adults with disabilities. I know that we need an aggressive, comprehensive, and community-based employment strategy. Only 20% of people with disabilities are in the workforce. That is ridiculous, compared to 70% of the non-disabled. Clearly, discrimination is at work in many different ways. Some of it has to do with age and health status, but much of it has to do with lack of jobs, lack of training, and the pure frustration that drives people with disabilities to just give up on the prospect of employment. And it has to do also with policies that penalize those who can work by cutting disability and health benefits if you do work and earn too much. You know, we want to create incentives for work, not disincentives for work. So we can't afford to have people with disabilities sitting on the sidelines when you can be productive members of our community, and I know that that you are. So I am pleased by the Obama administration's commitment to hiring people with disabilities, both directly at the federal agencies and indirectly in setting 7% hiring goals for federal contractors and through the Small Business Administration. So for the first time, the Obama administration has ordered the Bureau of Labor Statistics to report on employment rates for people with disabilities. So we can isolate those numbers and we can actually see if progress is being made or not being made and then make the necessary changes. I know we need to do more. Great. Thank you. We need to do more. I look forward to working in partnership, but I know we're not going to solve the problem by giving the top 2% wealthiest Americans another $5 trillion in tax breaks and hoping that they hire disabled people with the money. It's about making sure that people can work without losing health benefits, improving training and education, eliminating sub-minimum wage jobs.
Yes.
I agree. Every person who works deserves at least a minimum wage.
Yes, ma'am.
I know. I'm working. I'm coming closer to your plan here. You're working on me. I know. We need to do more on transportation so people have safe, convenient, and affordable ways to get to work and to participate in their community. And you know, it's not just for you. Transportation is about, I mean, mass transit is about helping our environment. It's cost effective. It's, you know, it's just the way that we have to go in the future, in the 21st century. It's good for the riding public. It's good for job creation, both as a mechanism to get people to their jobs and to create jobs in public transit itself. We fight every year about Amtrak, about funding to state and local mass transit, and that, of course, as I said, is the 21st century transportation solution. There is a government role. You know, there's a big debate now, what about too much government? There is a government role in ensuring that every person has access to quality education and health care and accessible transportation and good jobs. And the Americans with Disabilities Act is proof that laws and the government can foster change that the private sector just simply isn't going to do on its own. And of course, the ADA didn't happen on its own. What it really came about, the reason it really came about was the result of organizing and pressure and lobbying by the disability community, and we need that level of activism more than ever. And I want to end, I think Patty was the one, or maybe that please vote on November 6th. Get all your friends to go out and vote. We have early voting. We have early voting made easier now in the state of Illinois. You don't have to prove anything. You can just vote early, you know.
And often.
You know what I'm saying?
We used to have that in New York, too.
I know. Now you don't. You don't have to prove a thing.
Oh, Jersey. Forget it.
So please, we have 2 weeks of early voting. The last day to register to vote is October 9th. This is, you know, politicians say it all the time, the most, I think, in my lifetime, the most important election, because it's not just the president's name on the ballot or my name on the ballot, but we have Medicare on the ballot. We have the middle class on the ballot. We have persons mm-hmm. with disabilities on mm-hmm. the ballot. It's what kind of country we want to live in that's on the ballot. So please participate in this election. Thank you so much for inviting me.
But if you can hang on for just a second, I think you'll recognize the lady that's going to come up next. We have more than one connection to Congressman Chakowsky's office. One of our own has just been given an internship in her office, so I'm going to give you Rose Sloan for a minute.
All right, Rose.
Jan, we would just like to thank you for being here, and thank you for supporting the National Federation of the Blind. We have a T-shirt that we would like to present to you. On the front, it is shaped like an eye chart, and it reads, "I am who I am. Your approval is not needed."
I love that.
Show it to the speaker.
And then on the back, we have written NFB in Braille. So,
yes,
cool. So just thank you so much for your support.
Thank you, Rose. I'm so excited to have you as an intern in my office. So thank you very, very much. And I love that slogan. I am who I am. Your approval is not needed. That's so cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Madam President.
Hold on, please. I'll play president for a minute.
Thank you so much. Carl, you want to say something?
No, you were being called, and I thought I'd let you speak to the congresswoman until you were done.
I appreciate that.
I was just backstopping you, ma'am.
You're doing what you're supposed to do.
It's yours again, ma'am.
Thank you for coming, Congressman. We do appreciate it very, very much. And thank you for being with us on so much stuff. All right, Denise, go ahead.
All right. Well, you know I'm anxious to give away a door prize after that. I'll bet you are. All right. What we have, I'm sure you'd like this. We have $20 in cash donated by the Kankakee Heartland Chapter. We have to go with it a cube clock a cube clock and picnic tote, and that's donated by Dave and Teresa Meyer.
Oh.
And that is going to go to Anil, but it's going to Alexander West.
Alex West. Do it again.
All right. Anil might get it. Okay, this time.
Yes.
Did we get him?
Oh, I'm going to take questions.
Okay. This time. Oh, well, check this out. It's going to Patty Chang.
Yeah, you got some.
I am in the house.
All right, whatever it is you got.
I didn't hear what I got, though. I was talking to Dickie Gekos. Oh, money. Money, money, money. I'll take that. Anytime. Thank you very much. Oh, and a T-shirt. All right. Do one more, will you, Denise?
Okay, this is an interesting combination, thanks to Leanne. We have a food shopper and hair dryer. Wonder if you want that, Anil.
I love that. Food chopper and hair dryer. Oh, great for Anil.
A hair chopper and a food dryer.
Awesome.
Now, this goes to, is it Manny Bud? Is that right? Manny?
Manny Bud. I think he just left. Manny?
All right.
Gone.
All right.
Going, gone.
All right, you have another chance, Anil.
One more try.
All right, let's see. Zach Carr.
Zach Carr is not here.
He's not here. So, here we go again.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, this is going to Dana Carr. She's not here.
Not here. Katie Lennon, make your way up front, too, please.
All right, Denise. I think she's here. Jean Rauschenbach.
Oh, I hear Jean. Do one more while I figure this out.
Okay.
Please.
We've got a gift certificate given to us by Horizons for the Blind, and it's $25 gift certificate to Gadget Gift Gallery. And that goes to Terry Leap.
Terry Leap, she's probably here. Terry?
Yeah, I think I heard her. Terry?
Well, Terry, this is good. Terry Leap. Okay, the scholarship committee will meet in Huron after general sessions. The scholarship committee, not winners, scholarship committee will meet in Huron after general sessions. Nikki, you wanted the floor for a bit?
Yeah, just one second.
Go ahead.
One of the things about being entrepreneurs and part of the National Federation of the Blind is that we've held a lot of meetings with corporations like Subway, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, Quiznos at the National Center. And we have a new initiative out now to raise money and awareness for Braille literacy. I have a bottle here in my hand. It's a bottle of water. It's called Push 2-0 Water. And on every bottle that is sold, and it's just not sold to the blind vet entrepreneurs, but it's sold, there's over a million bottles that are now printed. It says on it, for more information, fight Braille literacy,
text $5 to Braille at 85944. And then for more information, www.nfb.org, and there's a picture of the Who's It on it. And so these bottles will be out there, and it's a way to raise money. So if you text Braille to 85499, it's only $5, not $10 like Carl's. But this is just one of the initiatives that we have going now. I do have a case of the water here for Patty that she can give out. But I take it when I go to meetings now, and I hand it out like a business card. And then people look at it, and I've been selling it in my post office, and people hopefully have been, and I know they've been texting it, because they tell me they have. So it's a way for us to raise awareness to Braille literacy and raise dollars for it. Thank you.
And to follow up, Nikki, we have text to give cards here that you will all be leaving with before tomorrow is over to tell people who meet you saying, I'd sure like to help you. How can I help you? Hand them a card. The instructions are there. Every card you give out could mean $10 more. We have printed about 100,000 of these cards for nationwide distribution. If we only got 20% of these cards to come in with the text, we'd have $250,000, folks. It's not a heavy lift. Remember the parable of the sower with the seed? No. All right. A sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, you don't want me to recite the whole Luke story, do you? Don't ask a boy from seminary to start that. Don't ask an old preacher to get started. Anyway, the sower threw a lot of seed around, and we have a lot of seed in these text to give cards right here. I know IABS will be glad to do it, won't you? Not you. You haven't been an S in a long time. Anyway, we're going to give them out to you, folks. We're going to get this message going. We're going to talk about it later. I just want to keep it on your radar screen. We can't do it right now because the president has an agenda to run.
Madam, we do.
I'm sorry. No, I'm not.
But we have 500 of these cards, and I don't want to take them home. So you're all going to take some home. The teen scene is happening right now in the Michigan room. So if you are a teenager or thereabouts,
Neil,
you can head across the hall. Nikki and Neil are on their way. Michigan room right across the hall. Teen scene. Michigan room. I don't know where they get these names. Okay. Do we have... Now, I'm switching back. Denise, give me one door prize so I can get these people's attention, will you?
Okay. We have a cassette recorder, a battery charger, and a scarf. And a rechargeable battery. That is going to go... All right.
The candy man has candy.
Debbie Stein.
Debbie Stein. I know she's here because she just gave me an announcement. Yeah, we got her.
Patty? Is she here?
Yes. Nikki?
I have a $20 bill from the merchants to give us a door prize.
Oh, give it to Denise over there. Merchants are giving us $20 for a door prize. Thank you, merchants.
On behalf of this panel.
On behalf of this panel specifically. Thank you. We're going to shift gears back to the panel now. I promised the congressman that I would put her on as soon as she got here. She had an engagement with NBC7 or something right after this? ABC7 maybe. I don't remember. Anyway, you get the idea. So does anybody have questions for our vendors panel? Any of the gentlemen that spoke?
Carl really sounds like George Carlin. Does he know any George Carlin bits?
I wouldn't even get Carl started.
Not suitable for presidential releases.
What a crowd.
I tell you. All right, can we give him a hand then? Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. By the way, women are allowed in the program. I just didn't get any on the panel. Take the literature from the back of the room. Katie Lenham, you're making your way up here. Let them off, and then we can put you on. Don't forget to bring your ticket to the banquet. And Denise, can you do a door prize for me?
Well, actually, given the panel that just left and the fact that they gave us a $20 donation, we're going to go ahead...
and we're going to pull a name for that. Sorry, Anil, doesn't go to you. It goes to Gina Falvo.
Gina. Gina is in the house. I knew she would be. We got her. Our next panelist first spoke at a convention when she was much younger than she is now. I can't remember exactly how old she was, but I do remember her shaking. I truly remember her shaking before she did it. I'll bet she's a lot less nervous this time because it's becoming old hat for her. Our project innovation, Katie's going to tell you about it, but she was a mentor in the program, and so she's giving it from a little different perspective than last time. The last time she spoke, she was a participant. So you want the table mic or the podium mic? Okay, works for me. Katie Lenham, and I finally learned how to pronounce her name correctly.
Hello, everybody. My name is Katie Lenham. I am a scholarship winner, and I kind of introduced myself before, but I'm a freshman at Southern Illinois University Carbondale. I am majoring in architecture and fashion merchandising, which are kind of weird, but it goes for me. This summer, I was one of 9 senior innovators to go to Project Innovation, which is a new program that the NFB in Baltimore decided to put together. It was kind of like USLAM, but we got to pick what we wanted to study, and I really liked it, just saying. The 9 of us were senior innovators, and there was also junior innovators who were elementary age kids, and we were broken up into groups, and each group had 2 senior innovators and 4 junior innovators and 1 mentor who was in college. This, I really liked it because I was able to, like, learn how to mentor to the younger students, but still having someone to look up to kind of guide me how to become a good mentor for the younger students. One way I really learned this was the first night we were there, we learned how to make fractals, which is index cards folded together to make cubes, and those cubes are put together to make bigger cubes. And then the next night, we had to teach the junior innovators how to make them. And it was a little difficult because it's my first time teaching an elementary age kid how to make something without saying, like, just follow me and do it how I did it. I learned that saying the other way is not a good descriptive word, and they really don't know what you're saying. After that, the next night we went on a hike. And I believe that becoming a good mentor isn't just about yourself. It's not just about the other people, but it's also about yourself and knowing the limits that you can do and showing other people that if you've done it, then they can do it and they can go on further than you can. This was a hike for me. I am not a hiker. I do not like outdoors. I like shopping.
Indoor malls.
Yeah, I showed up in my bedazzled tennis shoes and some bangles and a nice sparkly bow in my hair, ready to go hiking. And I thought it was in a park. It's called Double Rock Park. You know, I thought it would be a nice little serene little path. Then we got to a creek. It was like 3 inches wide, about ankle deep, and I did not want to do it. I'm like, my shoes are going to get wet. And then my friends helped me, and we decided that we could have stopped. A couple kids stopped. I'm like, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to prove myself that I can cross this river and do it. And I believe that really helped me because then throughout the week, whenever there's other students who wanted to stop or didn't think they can do it, I had proof from a couple days earlier that, hey, I did not want to do this. I didn't think I could do it, but I did it. And I'm really proud of myself that I did it. And nothing major happened. It's just personal, like, joy that I was able to do this. Another thing was pushing them to do things that they didn't want to do. We went rock climbing as a group, the junior innovators and the senior innovators together one night. And a couple of the kids in my group didn't want to go rock climbing because they never did it and they didn't think they could. And I showed them that it's okay if you're nervous and scared, and it's okay if you don't do it the first time. But if you try and try, eventually you're going to be able to do something that you didn't think you could do, and you're going to be really proud of yourself. And I think all of the kids in my group made it up to the top of, like, all the walls because they just loved it so much. And I think that without a little bit of push, they weren't going to be able to do it. And I feel really proud that I got them to do something that they didn't think they could do. I also learned how to, like, balance my time a little bit better because each one of us had our own project that we were working on. I was studying bridges, and during the week, I was going to make two model bridges, which if anyone did woodworking, it's a lot more time-consuming than you actually think it will be. But while I was working on my bridges, I learned how to help the Genie Innovators with their projects and get to know them a little bit better. I helped one of them make three model rockets. I helped with a lost and found indicator that we turned into a game for a fun demonstration of it. And I helped with two hovercrafts, which were really, really cool to make. And then it also gave us a little bit of time to get, like, one-on-one to understand how each of them, what they liked, and it was more of a, like, group setting kind of split together. A lot of the time was more of me growing because whenever I first went there, I felt like I was a student still because I wasn't technically like the oldest one there, but it really helped me learn how to grow because I went there thinking that it was going to be like anything else where I just follow directions and do what they told me to do, but it really turned into me learning how to become a good mentor, and I feel like at the end of it, I'm someone that the junior innovators can look up to, and if any of them needed help, they can call and talk to me whenever they need. And I feel like I'm more of a role model than a student who just went there to have a fun weekend with some friends. And I also feel like the fractals that I said earlier is a good representation of the NFB to me because each note card, you didn't think a note card can turn into a giant thing just by folding it. There's no glue, no tape. It was just the note cards that were built together. I feel like that's how the NFB is. Each note card is a person, and the persons go together in the different groups, and those groups build a bigger group as a whole, and it can grow as big as anyone can imagine it to grow. And it's more than just a thing. It shows that people grouping together is power, and you need to lean on each other once in a while. But at the end, it turns into something really good. Throughout the week, I just learned to grow as a person and just do things you didn't think you can do. And don't be afraid to go up to someone and ask if they need help. And if they do, then do the best you can to help them. And if they don't need help, then that's fine. Just sit down and talk to them for a little bit and get to know them a little bit more. I really enjoy it. And if anyone else has ever thinks about becoming a mentor or helping out with anything, I really encourage it. I learned a lot about myself and I learned a lot about other people. I'm not saying I'm the best mentor ever or I did everything right, but it's a good learning process. And I think the more I do it, the more I'm going to become better and better at it and just stepping stones for the future and leadership or whatever I decide to do with my life.
All right. Katie says she can take questions. Do we have questions for Katie? And remember, I know who I am.
And you'll never go back.
And I'll never go back. I am who I am. Jamal Powell.
Question for Ms. Lenham.
It's Lenham. I finally figured that out.
It's a lot different than what I thought. I really enjoy it, though. It has challenges. Going to class for 4 hours twice a week is not really a great, fun use of time. But it's really interesting, and I'm learning a lot there. And it's a really good choice of school, I think, for me.
Anybody else? I Anil.
I just want to say I'm so very proud of you.
Me
so
too.
All that for sweet home.
Thank you.
Me too. Seriously. Very much. Thanks. I love watching these kids grow. You know, the best part about being president is watching these kids grow. And then they turn into adults, and then they become your compatriots. I mean, I've watched students that I really were kids when I first met them, and they're not kids anymore. They're young adults.
Neither are you.
They're, some of them are me after a while.
You're
not all
not
of them, though.
A kid anymore.
Yeah, you're not a kid anymore.
But you look good.
That's right.
I have a couple of announcements. Thank you, Katie. Give her a big hand, you guys. Katie's mom is where? Janet, you're doing a good job. Janet has agreed to do some work for us. She'll let her tell you the story, but I did my usual, yeah, great idea, go do it. IAPS, our Illinois Association of Blind Students, has raffle tickets for sale. $2 for one or three for $5. And I got that right this time.
I'll take two dozen.
Amazing. They're in the back, but you're going to have to move around to sell to some people because Carl says he'll take some, and I'll bet you have to come to him to sell them.
Or if you, you stay there until this is over.
Yeah.
All right, get up here and sell it.
Carrie Sapala should be making his way up here, please. And Denise, can you give us a couple door prizes?
Sure can. Okay, we have a Wilson recorder, a cassette book, and I think this is a T-shirt that is going to go not to Anil Lewis, but to Teresa Meyer.
I bet she's here. Teresa? No, she's not here? I wonder if she's working, though. Does anybody know? Dave, are you here? All right. Draw again. I can't confirm she's working. I think she is, but I'm not sure.
Okay, this
draw again.
Glenn Moore.
Glenn Moore. Are you in the room? Were you in the room when your name was called?
I was sitting in the
chair. Ah. I have to pick on Glenn. All right, do one more, please. Carrie, you're going to want the table mic as well. Stand up. Okay, I'll switch with you in just a second.
Okay, we have a big bath towel set, and this is from Pam Gilmore.
That's really cool.
This is the one I want.
A big bath.
Carrie wants this one, he says.
I don't think this person is here, but it goes to Byron Lee if he is.
Byron is not here.
Okay, we draw again.
Do it again.
Okay, I know this person isn't here. It's Kim Myers. Shelly
nope.
Myers? Shelly.
Shelly is in Teen Scene.
Okay, does she... She
if you
it.
Really drew her, not her mom,
I
she
did.
Gets
she
it.
Would. She was the alternate draw.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mom and then daughter?
Yes.
Oh, well, they were bound to win then, weren't they? All right. Shelly gets the prize. She's in Teen Scene. Shelly Myers. She's in Teen Scene. We can catch her a little bit later. Our next presenter is a gentleman that I have also had the privilege to watch grow. I first met Carrie when I first moved to Illinois, pretty much. And no, he's not as old as I am. But he is now a full-fledged professor, so we both actually technically have doctorates, although I don't get to call myself a doctor. Attorneys don't generally do that. But technically, we do have a doctorate.
Juvenile delinquent,
Carl says. Yeah, you're frightening, Carl. Carrie also last year came to our parent seminar and presented a product that his company has developed called the LabQuest. I'm going to let him tell you all about his job and his career. But we are so pleased to have Carrie back in Illinois. He's a professor at Illinois State University.
Oh, you want that?
Okay.
No, I'm good.
Madam President.
Yeah.
We don't find Shelly, so would we?
Oh.
Can we draw again?
Yeah, you sure. Can. Shelly skipped out.
Well, it's actually going to go to a person that's standing right. She's getting ready to run away, but it's Nancy Gardner.
Nancy? Are you here? All right. Nancy does all kinds of stuff all weekend, you guys. I'm glad she finally got a door prize out of it.
Yeah.
Yay.
Should have got roller skates.
All right. Oh, this is a very nice mic. I like it. Okay. Have you ever wondered why ice melts, food spoils, why the sun rises in the east and sets in the west? All these questions deal with different aspects of science. Science can mean different things to different people. To me, as a research chemist, I like to study elements and compounds. In other words, I like to study matter itself. Back when I was in high school in Bolingbrook, Illinois, I always wondered why things were the way they were. When I went to college at Purdue University, my interest in science further was stimulated by those around me. Later, I went on to graduate school at Penn State University. There is where I really learned how to be a scientist. I first worked on a research project that used transition metals on the periodic table to make different catalysts to promote different chemical reactions. Catalysts, if you didn't know, lowers the activation energy needed to cause a chemical reaction to occur. Towards the end of my master's work at Penn State was when I discovered the harsh reality of needing my own access technologies to do my lab work. Up until that time, I had been working with different undergraduate students to perform my laboratory manipulations. Although I had done the research in the literature to design my own experiments, I still was not able to perform many of the actual manipulations myself. As a result, since I was working with various students at different times, they introduced variations in synthesis and synthesis techniques. Slight variations as simple as how they stirred something to how they poured two compounds together can significantly alter your results. All these variations introduced extra variables into my experimental design. As a result, my work did not yield any statistically significant findings. Therefore, the need to develop ways for me to do my own lab work was on. I pursued a research grant from the National Science Foundation to develop the first set of talking laboratory tools. We at Penn State were successful at securing this funding, and thus the Independent Laboratory Access for the Blind project was born. At that time, we took the JAWS screen reader and scripted it to work with the Logger Pro scientific data collection software package sold and distributed by Veneer Software and Technology. This was later done also for the Window Eyes screen reader from GW Micro. Veneer sells an entire suite of lab probes of over 70 in nature to be used in the high school and college laboratory classes. We field tested these tools in residential schools for the blind and later mainstream science classes. Through this effort, we were able to make all veneer probes text-to-speech accessible to the blind. Later, I started my own company, Independent Science, to commercialize these tools. So often, researchers at universities develop something cool and publish a paper on it, then the matter more or less dies. I did not want that to happen in this case. Through these and other efforts, I was able to secure a tenure-track faculty position at Illinois State University teaching chemistry. After having gone through a long, grueling job applications and interview process with approximately 150 colleges in the United States, I found an excellent fit here at ISU. I have for a long time dreamed of returning back to my home state of Illinois. And when this job posting became available, I knew this would be my dream job. My position at ISU, in addition to my teaching obligations, has made me the director of the Chemistry Teacher Education Program at ISU. So what does that mean? It means my program is responsible for the recruitment and training of new chemistry teachers at ISU. This is a very exciting opportunity for me because I will be helping people become science and chemistry teachers, which is at the heart of where my passion is. Further, I am also obligated to run an externally funded research program. At the moment, my projects I am now starting deal with curriculum development in the areas of chemistry and biology as it pertains to science access for blind students. I am also interested in collaboration with researchers that believe in the full integration of the blind into science, technology, engineering, and mathematics STEM career paths. Through my new collaborations with my new collaborations with the faculty and the teacher of the visually impaired program at ISU, I am now encouraging them to adopt the mindset that hands-on science learning for the blind is genuinely a good idea. Because when you learn to do for yourself is when you believe in your capabilities. With the endorsement of the faculty at ISU, I believe we'll go a long way into opening doors of opportunity for science access at other secondary and post-secondary institutions across the United States. It is for these and many other personal reasons why I am happy to be back home in Illinois. To that end, I would like to leave you all with one additional take-home message today. That is to find an academic pursuit where you have a passion for. For me, my passion is in science and chemistry. For you, it might be engineering, school teaching, or some other opportunity, possibly the Randolph Shepherd program. Whatever that passion is, go after it and make a commitment to both yourself and to your fellow blind peers to work to that end to make your dream a reality. Thank you very much.
Now, if I can find a mic, we can take some questions. Here we go. I'm all set. Any questions? Y'all out there? Hello? Hello? Give me your name again. Oh, David, good to see you. I'm glad that you and Hannah made it. I figured she would be.
Excellent. Well, it started with math. Oh, yes. The question was, at what age did I become interested in science and chemistry? The fact of the matter is, it started originally with math. Back when I was in fourth grade, learning how to memorize times tables and things of that sort was old hat. But it was in the fourth grade, and I'm dating myself a little bit, when we got introduced to basic calculators for the first time. And I didn't have access to a talking calculator, but my classmates had regular calculators, and they were able to do some really large calculations. So I taught myself how to do large multiplication problems in my head. And I was able to impress a lot of my classmates with this ability. Now, sometimes I'd be wrong, but a lot of times I'd be right. So it started with the math. And I actually, when I got to high school, I hated chemistry class because I wasn't allowed to do any laboratory manipulations. I was prohibited from stirring solutions in beakers and pouring things and whatnot. So it was very hands-off, very passive, and hence very boring. And it wasn't until I got to Purdue University, when at the time I was a pre-med student, and I had to take chemistry classes and organic chemistry and all those wonderful things. And it was through those hard knocks classes, if you will, that gave me lots of frustration. But through encouragement from graduate students and faculty at Purdue, they said, if you work hard enough at this, you can really get this. And eventually the light went on and I started mastering the content. And then I was further inspired by faculty when they were explaining to me about their research projects. And I said, well, what if you added or changed these variables in your experiment? What types of results do you think you'd get? Okay. Now, sometimes my ideas got shot down because they weren't really very enlightening. But in other cases, they were very insightful to the faculty. At least that's what they told me. So when I started acquiring the ability to contribute to scientific questions, I think, was in college.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Bill Isaacs?
Yes. When I took chemistry back in 1953, I had pinpoint vision in one eye.
You got a table of eight elements.
I could see the test tube, or I could see the flame, but I couldn't see them both at the same time.
Okay.
How did you work that out? Did it have to be with another person?
Well, the question was, how did I do laboratory manipulations in chemistry lab classes in college? Is that the question, Bill?
When you're dealing with a Bunsen burner.
When I'm working with the Bunsen burner. Okay, so what I figured out was you can take a wooden match, and you can feel the Bunsen burner with the match. Okay, and when you turn the gas line on, you could hear the gas flowing through the pilot. And then you strike the match, and you hear it light. And then you touch the edge, the side of the Bunsen burner stem, and you pulled it up, and then you swooped it over the top. And guess what happened? The Bunsen burner lit, and you always wanted to have a beaker of just plain water nearby to drop that match in. So that way you had control of your workspace and minimized any potential chance of injury.
Everybody, so they had me working with medical students who
Okay, good. Good, good, good.
I heard somebody else seek the floor. Who else won the floor? Any other questions?
Are you sure? My students had an exam Thursday night, and I know they'll have lots of questions for me on Monday.
To that Gary, end, I cannot tell you how happy we are to have you back, you know.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be home. Thank you very much, guys.
Will this material be on the exam?
Denise, can we do a couple door prizes for that?
Sure. All right, we have a collectible bank and an 8-gig flash drive. And that is going to, if she's here, Kathy Stepp.
Kathy Stepp. Don't hear.
Okay. This will go to, is Bob Widman here?
Bob Widman? Yes. We have him. Try one more. All right, yeah, we got him. I'm saying one more door prize.
Okay, we have a glass mixing bowl set and a cube clock, and that's from Dave Meyer, and that's going to go to Don Jordan.
Oh, Don Jordan. Is Don here?
I'm sorry. Oh, there's also a green scarf from Gina Falvo, so he can...
Don Jordan's not here.
He's not here?
Again.
All righty. Maybe this could be you, Anil. Uh-oh. Anil Lewis! If you don't succeed, try again.
Hope does spring eternal. You know, when Carrie was talking about his passion, most of you know I'm an attorney, but many of you don't know that my passion in terms of what I actually do is building safety. So if you ever really want to hear a lot about buildings, building materials, the International Building Code, and fire safety, walk a building with me. You'll hear more than you want to hear.
Better than signal.
Our last speakers of the day come to us, or at least Sean comes to us from the north, and Andrew comes back to us from the north. We have training centers in 3 states now. One of them is in Minnesota.
Yeah. Here.
Our training centers are unique, and I do mean unique. I don't mean unique amongst training centers. I mean ours are unique. So I'm going to let Sean Mayo tell you how they're unique and how you can get the best training that's offered, I think, anywhere in the world. Sean?
All right.
Yankees.
Thanks, Patty. It is so wonderful to be back here in Illinois. For those who don't know, this is where I first met my Federation family. It's where I first went blind, and I didn't know any other blind people until I met people in the National Federation of the Blind. So since I've been back here, people have welcomed me, and it's like I haven't left, and I really appreciate your warmth and your family and welcoming back. So I can understand we tried to keep Andrew, we tried to keep Carrie, we tried to keep Bob Gardner, Gene Rauschenbach, and others out there, but, you know, Illinois is a good place to be, too, so it's good to be back.
I'm glad to have him back.
Yes, Lori and Rob also say hello. They're from Illinois, but we plan to keep them up there in Minnesota. So now, I have a question for everybody out there. How many of you all have ever been on an airplane?
Hi.
Quite a few, huh? And how many of you have ever stood in line and gotten something to eat at the airport?
Yeah.
Marvelous. Well, recently I was at the airport and I was standing in line to buy a breakfast sandwich, and a woman tapped me on the shoulder and asked what my name was. And all of a sudden I started worrying, wonder, oh my goodness, who should I be remembering her from somewhere? Who is this person? And so I slowly said, Sean. And more like a question, but you know, I know who I am. And before I could ask her anything more to try to get information on who she was, she said, "Well, Sean, your courage has inspired me today." And I was left speechless. That's sometimes hard to do.
Amen.
And I had been told before how amazing I was for doing everyday tasks. But for me, courage was one of those large and abstract terms that was best left for the battlefield and for burning buildings. And I almost felt like I was in one of those Bud Light, Real Men of Genius commercials, and I'd hear the announcer soon saying, "Here's to you, blind airport traveler." And I had to hold back a little laugh at the time. But here were two people who witnessed the same event, but we analyzed it in very different ways. To me, even though the sandwich was delicious, it was the most ordinary thing to get up, stand in line, ask what they had on their menu, place an order, pay for it, want to walk away. I do it over 50 times a year. And I know other blind people who do this all the time. But as I thought about it, I knew that at one time that I didn't do this. Now, if I was honest with myself, I thought I could do it. But, you know, I tell myself, oh, you're not hungry. You don't need to have a sandwich right now. You're going to be okay. If I took an honest look at myself, though, I knew back then that I was not comfortable doing it and that I really did not think that I could do it. That was before I decided that I needed to stretch myself. People in the Federation told me that I needed to push myself to try something new and to get my training at Blind Incorporated. So when I got home, I decided to look up the definition of courage. And Merriam-Webster says that courage is the mental or moral strength to venture, persevere, or withstand difficulty, danger, and fear. So I started to think about what a woman had said, and I thought that maybe it was not as overdramatic as I had originally thought. Nowadays, after training over 15 years ago at Blind Incorporated, I use my store of courage for other things in my life. But before training, it did take courage. It took courage to get on a plane. It took courage to stand in a line to get food. It took courage to explain to the TSA officer that I am a big girl who is traveling alone. It used to take courage to do these things and to just go out there. I used to be afraid to do these things. And it occurred to me that courage is what it takes to put blindness in its proper place. But it's not extraordinary courage. And I realized that what we do at Blind Incorporated is encourage students. Now, it's a shame that courage is a noun. It really should be a direct verb. It should be a It really needs to be a direct verb to describe what our students do. They courage up. Sort of similar to the phrase cowboy up. You've heard of that? Yeah, leveling up in role play gaming. It's where you're facing your anxieties and doing what needs to be done. Or with the cowboys, you're bringing in the herd despite the storms and the coyotes. Now, when I got back, when we go back to the definition, I want to show how it plays out. So if we look at the definition again, courage entails three strengths: to venture, persevere, or to withstand difficulty. Now, I'm not a fan of the word withstand. See, I'm going to be a kind of a grammatical person here and change words around here. But I think that withstand should be a little more active as well. And so let's use the word take on. So if we So if we start with the definition from courage, and the first strategy or strength of to take on danger and difficulty. We're going to start there. Now, going out into the world as a blind person is not inherently dangerous, but it can appear to be dangerous on the surface level, and this can cause a fear, so which can be a difficulty in its own right. So you have to take on the fear and the doubt. In addition, you have to take on the real practical difficulties. How am I going to read? How am I going to get from place to place? How am I going to cook? How am I going to get a job? This is what students take on in each of their classes every day. You know, in Braille, the word cannot can be changed to the word can by removing three dots. Now, if you add one more dot, you get do. Okay, following me, with me? Well, when our students start out, they think that they cannot, but they're surrounded by people who can, being students who are more advanced than them and their instructors. Then they start going out there and doing the things so that they change can to do. Now, the next part of the definition is to persevere. Now, making difficulties into ordinary. This does not happen overnight, and it does not happen as quickly as one may think that it should. Wouldn't it be great if we could just take all the alternative techniques of blindness skills and download them directly into a person's head like they did to Keanu Reeves to teach him how to do kung fu in the movie The Matrix? But it's more than just the skills, and it takes time. You have to work hard to develop the methodology. And we're working on developing ways to make Braille faster and more efficient. We just had presentations in Baltimore about ways that we're doing this. But it still takes effort and dedication. Our travel instructors teach solid strategies for dealing with all sorts of situations on cane travel. But again, mastery is measured in miles, not feet. Some things are easy, and for some, they're more enjoyable. But the most satisfying ways when a person is training and techniques that they've done are the ones that took the most work. I think it was Woody Allen that said that 90% of success is showing up. And I'd take that even a step further. I would say it's showing up when you're frustrated, showing up when you're exhausted, showing up when it's snowing outside, and going out there and putting the miles on your cane and beneath your fingers when you'd rather be sitting in front of the TV or eating a bowl of ice cream. Now, the last element in the definition is to venture, to take a risk. The biggest risk that we face when going through training is the loss of our comfort zone and the possibility that you will be a different, that you will be different in certain circumstances when you finish your training. We have to address the fears as a person goes through training. And we see this as a how a person grows through this, through our graduation ceremonies. We'll often hear a person say, oh, when you started, now this doesn't apply to Anil, but if you weren't Anil, they would say, well, when you started, you were so quiet, and now you're out there, you're talkative, you're being the social event planner for a group, or you would hear, wow, when you started, I remember when you didn't want to go out of your apartment. And now look at you. You're going all over the city and doing the things that you want to do. A person usually comes to get training because they're in a box. This box is small, and it's limiting. But at the same time, you start out feeling in there that it's cozy. It's comfortable. You start to get tired of that. And if you're in the Federation, you'll see other blind people who are out there doing things, and you want to have a part of that. And you don't want to be limited in your life. But in this box, there's plenty of room for excuses and justifications. But you'll work your way out of this because you know that it's not what you want. And as you work your way out of this box, you'll find some things that you're interested in that you may not have seen before. You'll become more assertive, hopefully not like Carl or Patty up here. Though I say hopefully not, but that is exactly what we want.
Can't take three of us.
Can't take three of you guys, but we do want your assertiveness out there. So you go out there and your personality comes out. That may not have before you've done changing. Now, your core personality does not change, but you're going to act differently in certain situations. And this is a big change for the student and for their friends and family. And ultimately, it's a good change. And everyone has to come to terms with this change. People have to realize that the blind person does not need the help that they needed before they started training, that she doesn't need the arm to go across the parking lot that she did beforehand. And this changes the dynamic of your relationships. It also is a risk to one's pride. You have to be able to admit that you may not have been as good as what you thought you were before, and that you could do better. We want to push you and have you grow. We had one of our instructors was doing training and thought that she would be finished with her training in 3 months and run in circles around all the other students there, and went out for pizza one night, and she found herself at an intersection like a lost puppy. Well, the students came back to get her, of course. But later on, from that point forward, she walked a little bit faster because she was carrying less ego. Now, this was tough to take. It took courage. In reality, the reality is, if everyone tells you that you are extraordinary because you are blind and you are doing the daily tasks of life, then how will you ever be extraordinary for the things that you really do that make you interesting and unique? We want blindness to be a non-factor. We want our graduates to have the same opportunities to succeed and fail as people who are sighted do. What we do is encourage. We encourage people to go out there and test themselves and to push themselves forward. And this means that we will not settle for less. Courage is an intransitive verb, which means that we're not the ones doing the work, but the students are. And they should get the same rewards for taking the same risks that go out there. And the role that we have as instructors is to make ourselves less necessary. The point that we don't need it. We need to work ourselves out of a job so that when we get some of the graduates, like Carrie and Andrew and the others out here that I named, they don't need an instructor with them. And then they get to reap the benefits and to pass that on to other people. I wish I could have explained this to the woman at the airport. She was right. It did take courage, but it wasn't extraordinary courage. A lot of us have it. More have it every day. If we keep encouraging one another, more people will find it, and it will become more and more ordinary. This is what it is about in the National Federation of the Blind. This is what it is about at Blind Incorporated. Encouraging, striving, expecting more of ourselves and others. We take difficulty and make it ordinary. We persevere and we venture. We change the I can do it into the I do it. And this is how we change what it means to be blind. Thank you.
Scenes crises. One with every convention, right? This one's solved, so I'm smiling. All right. Those are the kind you don't even tell anybody about, right? And then Neil's laughing. The state presidents in the room, or former state presidents, are laughing because you've all done it. You've all done it. All right. Yeah, it was my turn to solve this one. Our next speaker is a gentleman who, when he first placed a call to me, impressed me. He wasn't blind all that long before he called me. And he said, you know what? I got kids, I got a wife, and I need some good training. And I don't think I'm going to get it in Illinois. I said, you know what? Yeah, that's probably true. So he made his way to Blind Inc. And without further ado, I'm going to let you talk to Andrew Webb, yet another blind attorney.
I do. Thanks, Patty, and thanks for the introduction. It's great to be with you guys today. And Sean, your airport story actually sort of ironically reminded me of a personal anecdote.
Eat the mic.
Am I in front of the mic? Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you guys hear me okay now?
Raise it up.
That's that fancy.
Taller than I am, you know.
Just a hair. Well, I think it's going lower, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. All right. That working okay? All right. Great. So, Sean, your airport story reminded me of sort of a personal anecdote. My younger child, my son, had his third birthday party, and we asked him what theme he wanted for his birthday party, and he said a Curious George party of all things. So, as part of that, I got pressed into duty to dress up as the man with the yellow hat. My wife somehow managed to cobble together from a collection of thrift stores, none of them Goodwill, don't worry. We found these ridiculous heavy-duty brown workman boots and solid yellow pants and a solid yellow long-sleeve shirt and somehow a yellow sombrero type of thing. And I sported all of this, and she had promised me that she was actually going to dress up in a monkey suit, but that didn't happen somehow. So here I was working my way around the party, and a rather warm day to be dressed up in this garb, and toward the end of the party, the mom of one of the other kids actually came up to me and said, "Andrew, your courage has inspired me today." That's exactly what I somehow thought of when you related the words you'd heard in that breakfast line, Sean. Great to be with you guys again today, and I just want to point out that as wonderful as my experience was at Blind Incorporated, making a decision to get that kind of training is not always easy.
No.
It requires a big commitment and a lot of sacrifice. And the reasons that are often cited by people who are kind of equivocating on whether or not to pursue that training tend to be that it takes a long time, that it's a long way from my home, that my family can't afford to have me gone for that long, that I can't get that long away from work, or I can't be looking for work while I'm doing that training. Those things all resonated with me, and I thought for a very long time that I couldn't afford to do that training, and what I finally realized was I really couldn't afford not to. Just to give you a brief snapshot of where I am and where I've come from. I lost my vision pretty suddenly, right about 4 years ago, just due to a freak injury, and that led to countless innumerable surgeries and my learning more ophthalmology than the average layperson would even think of, but I guess a lot of us are in that boat. And that discussion we were having earlier today about doctors always giving you the best case scenario in your prognosis. Oh yeah, I know all about that. At some point I realized what the doctors were telling me was one thing, and what common sense was telling me was another. So it was a difficult decision, but my wife and I finally decided that even though she was going to pretty much have to keep the home fires burning and take care of two small kids and work for 6 to 9 months while I was away, in the long run, that's what we needed to do. And what I knew, what I thought I knew about Blind Incorporated and NFB training in general, is that it would do the best job of any program available to me in terms of just teaching me the skills that I would need in order to be independent and self-sufficient. And when I was talking to Patty shortly before leaving for Blind Incorporated, she said to me, "You know, Andrew, when you get up there and you hear about our philosophy, it is going to open your eyes and get you to think and all new ways about your blindness." And I said, "Yes, yes, of course." And of course, internally, I said, "What in the hell is this lady talking about?"
Sure.
But it is so true. I had gotten some training prior to going to Blind Incorporated, and at that time, I thought it was enough. I learned to use a cane to travel, more or less. I learned to read Braille, more or less. I learned to cook, sort of. Well, you'd have to ask my wife about that, but You know, I learned JAWS and some technology, and I thought I was good to go. And when I got done with that training and tried to make my way back into the working world and tried to travel independently, I realized I wasn't there. I pretty much fell flat on my face. And as time went by, my world just sort of somehow, almost without my even realizing it, just got a little bit smaller and smaller. I sort of lost my ability to get out and travel independently. My social circle got smaller. The people I used to see on a regular basis, I didn't see them as much anymore. In many cases, I stopped seeing them at all. My world just sort of got to be confined to my own household and my own family. And at some point, I knew I was sort of reaching the nadir when my wife said to me, you know, I look at you and I don't really even recognize the person I'm seeing anymore. It just seems like you kind of go through the motions every day. You just kind of exist. That's when I knew I needed to do something drastic. So I, in my time at Blind Incorporated, I was urged to take on new tasks and challenges every day, things that I didn't necessarily think that I would be capable of doing. But I've done those things. I'm a far superior cane traveler today than I was a year ago this time. I have cooked innumerable number of meals and for very, very large groups. I know I can do that now. I'll probably never cook for 50 people again the rest of my life if I can if I can possibly help it. But I know if it came to that, I could do it. My technology skills are far better. I read Braille far faster. And most of all, going back to the point of what Patty told me, I have my experiences there and learning from excellent blind role models have just given me a much better attitude about my blindness. I now accept, and it's not just propaganda, I have internalized this and realized it. Blindness is a characteristic of me. It is a respectable condition. And I recognize now what I had subconsciously not seen before, which is that I am not a broken-sighted person. I am a functional, independent, blind person, and it's a wonderful feeling. And for the love of God, I will never, ever, with the possible exception of driving, ever use blindness as an excuse for why I can't do something. So I want to thank Sean and the faculty members at Blind Incorporated for the leadership and training that they've and patience they've exercised, of course, in dealing with me, that they provided to me in my time at Blind Incorporated. I want to thank Patty for her support paving the way for me to get up there. And I want to say hello to all of you, and I look forward to a long and wonderful relationship with this federation in the years to come. Thanks.
You see, Andrew, as altruistic as I am, you now came back a potential leader in the federation. So I want to see how far you take that next. Do we have questions for Sean or Andrew?
I'm sorry.
We know who we are, Anil. You know how to play this game, too.
I was getting ready to ask my question without being acknowledged. I apologize.
Anil, go ahead.
Andrew, what did you find the most challenging in the training?
Repeat the question, please.
The toughest thing for me was probably the travel. I also have a pretty significant hearing loss, so that's sort of, you know, I realize I'm probably not the only one in this room who meets that description, but that gave me some extra consideration to deal with, and I'm still not as far along with that as with my independent travel skills as I would like to be, but you know, I'm far, far, far better off than I was and ever would have been without the training.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, comments?
Oh, I have a comment.
I think that's Kelly Pierce.
Yes.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Should I have a microphone?
I'll repeat it. Oh. The mics are kind of hard to get your hands on right now.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I just want to
say, I'm a 1991 graduate of Light Incorporated, and it has been a tremendous transformation in my life at that point, and propelled me for success for the next 20 plus years. And it sounds as relevant and as effective now as it was when I learned from leaders such as Curtis Chong and Peggy Chong and her husband Curtis, and Nadine Jacobson and her husband Steve, and Joyce Scanlon and Sharon Duffy, who wrote my Braille book. So excellent.
Kelly is a 1991 graduate and still succeeding today. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Very good.
And was taught by some of the people that we will all recognize, like Curtis and Peggy Chow. Mm-hmm. Sharon Duffy broke his book. Other comments, questions? Any student, this is apparently not open to the whole world, but any student who is interested in hanging out after banquet is to see Rose in the back of the room. Do you mean now or at the end of banquet?
After banquet.
Sorry, I must have misread that. After banquet. If you want to hang out and you're a student, then you can see Rose. Now, make sure that you see IAMS. IAMS has raffle tickets, $2 a piece or 3 for $5. I have my money burning a hole in my pocket. Oh, you're running low. I see. T-shirts, I'm sure we're not running low on yet. Oh, we should have bought more than 100. Really? You better get your T-shirts then. The T-shirts go up to XX. Low on medium, she says. Low on mediums. $10 a piece for the T-shirts. Leanne. Oh, yeah. The cane, the lonely cane. I want to know whose cane this is. First of all, it's a long cane. It's about the length I would carry. So you're probably about 5'7", 5'8". It's got a Mickey Mouse on top, so that doesn't tell me whether you're male or female, but I want somebody to come claim the thing.
Madam Chairman.
It's yours.
No.
Yes, David.
How about if you auction it off?
Yeah.
Hey, I'll tell you what. If it doesn't get claimed by tomorrow, that is what we're going to do with the thing. Yeah. I don't think the hotel will keep it.
You should take the Mickey Mouse off and make the price go up.
The Mickey Mouse can be taken off, but I'm going to auction off with it on because that's what gives the thing character. Denise, give us a couple door prizes, please, we adjourn, so make them good ones.
Okay, Madam President, I hope you told Anil that he cannot win but one time.
To the podium.
Good.
During the banquet.
I did not explain that to Anil. Is that a rule?
Yeah.
Okay. Anil, you can't win more than once.
Thank you, Madam President.
All right. You're welcome.
But you still have to stay.
We have another $25 gift certificate from the Gadget Gift Gallery given to us by Horizons for the Blind. And that is going to go to Brian Moles.
Brian Moles. He is Kids Camp. They're doing face painting. He gets it.
Okay.
He's definitely doing face painting.
Okay.
Thank you. Give us another one.
Then we have $25 in cash given to us by the Ferris Wheel chapter.
Go Ferris Wheel.
And
all right.
And Jesse Rogers.
Jesse is here in the house. See, Jesse, what goes around comes around. You gave us money this morning, we gave you some this afternoon.
That's the Ferris wheel.
Goes around, comes around, Ferris wheel. That's true. Let's do one more. Now, I know I've said this, but I have to mean it. You guys, when we do adjourn, and I'm going to do a couple more announcements, but when we do adjourn, then you're going to need to clear this room. I know you love to chat. Chat somewhere besides Superior. Get out. Okay.
All right, our next prize
Denise, go
is
ahead.
A kitchen container set. And if he's here by now, hopefully he is, Josh Weinstock.
Josh Weinstock. All right, Josh, welcome. Welcome, welcome. We will start hospitality 6. Banquet starts at 7. The scholarship committee is meeting in Huron. Any other burning announcements that I didn't get out the door?
No.
Okay, we are adjourned. Go.